Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Great to be back. Thanks to Sarah Gonzalez and Kai Wright for filling in so ably last week. Later this hour, we'll take your calls on what you'll remember from the Rio Olympics. Now that these very fraught games are over, what will you remember from on the track, from in the pool, from on the gym floor, and what will you remember from off? And later in the show, we'll look at the Obama administration decision the other day to no longer use private prisons, which has a lot of justice advocates saying, yay, finally, no more private prisons with the horrors that they seem to have wrought, at least at the federal level. And we'll get into how it's kind of symbolic because a lot of the private prisons are at the state level and other things. But we will talk about that later in the show, what it means, what it doesn't mean, and look at a little bit of the history of this whole idea of such an important public function, the prison system, being privatized, not just contractors to run local prisons, but actually private prison facilities, which has become a big industry. And now that the public is aware of it and horrified by some of what has gone on there, at least the Obama administration at the federal level is walking away from it. But first, here's an interesting piece of presidential campaign news from BuzzFeed over the weekend that other news outlets are following up on now. BuzzFeed quoted several sources who attended a Saturday meeting between Donald Trump and his newly formed Hispanic Advisory Council, who said Trump expressed openness to a path to legalization for immigrants currently in the country illegally. That, of course, would be a reversal from the opening theme of his campaign last summer, in which he rose to Republican popularity, that in response to the large number of undesirable Mexicans here illegally, he would create a deportation force. On CNN's State of the Union yesterday, they played an example of that old position.
Going to have a deportation force, and you're going to do it humanely and expensively.
Are they going to be ripped out of their homes?
Can I tell you? They're going back where they came. If they came from a certain country, they're going to be brought back to that country. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to be.
So that was then. This is now. So they asked Trump's new campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, yesterday about Saturday's meeting and whether this is a reversal of position.
So does Donald Trump still support that? A deportation force removing the 11 million or so undocumented immigrants.
What he supports, and if you go back to his convention speech a month ago, Dana, what he supports is to make sure that we enforce the law, that we are respectful of those Americans who are looking for well-paying jobs, and that we are fair and humane for those who live among us in this country. And so as the weeks unfold, he will lay out the specifics of that plan that he would implement as president of the United States.
Will that plan include a deportation force, the kind that you just heard in that soundbite and that he talked about during the Republican primaries?
To be determined.
To be determined. Well, that was part of a week in which Trump tried talking more about Black or Latino issues generally, but so awkwardly and to so many ears so disingenuously, and a week in which Hillary Clinton might have been seen as the week's political loser if Trump hadn't once again done even worse. So we will get to both candidates with NPR political correspondent Mara Liasson and Rosie Gray, political reporter for BuzzFeed. Hi, Mara. Hi, Rosie.
Hi there.
Rosie, that was a BuzzFeed scoop originally. So what was that meeting and Trump's maybe new position, if it is a new position, or maybe just the latest thing he said off the cuff?
Well, this was some very good reporting by my colleague, Adrian Carrasquillo. And basically what he found out is that behind the scenes in this meeting with his Hispanic Advisory Council, Trump seems to have sort of indicated that he's interested in figuring out some sort of, quote, humane and efficient manner to deal with immigrants in the country illegally. And the campaign pushed back on it a little bit, but it does seem as though he's trying to soften this very hardline position that he's had pretty much since he started running, which is that he wants to deport, using deportation forces, the 11 million people who are in the country illegally. So we're in a little bit of a gray area because we're not exactly sure what he is going to end up doing in terms of this position, but it seems like he's opening the door to changing it.
And Kellyanne Conway said in that clip, well, he's going to lay out a policy about what he would do if he's president of the United States. And deportation force or no, to be determined, which sounds like he's starting all over. Mara, what do you make of this and the exchange with Kellyanne Conway?
Well, what I think is really interesting is that Kellyanne Conway has had an impact on this campaign, and she hasn't been the campaign manager for very long. Donald Trump expressed regrets for some things he said that had her fingerprints all over it. And now this potential softening of his position on undocumented immigrants currently in this country. What I think is really, really interesting about that is that for the very first time, Donald Trump is acting as though he's got his base nailed down and he's willing to do something that reaches out to the other voters that he needs if he's going to win. Swing voters, suburban women, moderate Republicans. And what's been so mind-boggling, I guess you'd say, about the Trump campaign up to now is that he hasn't done that, that he has continued to double down on a message to his base as if he felt that just increasing turnout among white working class voters, increasing turnout to astronomical, never before seen levels would be his path to victory. This, all the things he's doing now, the softening, potential softening of the immigration policy, the expression of regrets, suggests that he understands he can't win with just the base and is willing to do something, we don't know yet what, to broaden his appeal, if that's possible at this point in the campaign, which is very, very late.
Right. And at the same time, though, here is Trump's first campaign commercial now running, all focused on immigrants versus real Americans and the idea that America is rigged against native-born Americans, and a two-America message, not rich and poor, but immigrants and real Americans. Listen to the audio.
Hillary Clinton's America, the system stays rigged against Americans. Syrian refugees flood in. Illegal immigrants convicted of committing crimes get to stay, collecting Social Security benefits, skipping the line. Our border open, it's more of the same, but worse. Donald Trump's America is secure. Terrorists and dangerous criminals kept out. The border secure, our families safe. Change that makes America safe again. Donald Trump for president.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
So, Rosie, if he's engaging in outreach to Latinos, or even if it's just to white moderate suburban voters who are uncomfortable with how harsh he is toward Latinos, with this advisory council, and at the same time running this ad, do these fit together in some way that you can figure out?
Well, I think something that we've seen recently is this sort of, you know, he's sort of sometimes sort of halfway tries to, you know, do the so-called pivot to the general election in sort of fits and starts. So he'll do one thing that makes it seem like he really is pivoting. For example, that speech last week where he said that he regretted some of the comments he's made. And then he'll go right back to doing something that's just sort of classic Trump, like this morning, you know, tweeting negative things about Joe Scarborough. So really it's, I do think that, like Mara was saying, Kellyanne Conway seems to have had a great deal of influence towards him sort of softening certain things and becoming a little bit more, you know, primed for the general election. But we really, I mean, the answer is that these things don't really fit together. And even the fact, by the way, that they only just started running ads in key swing states this past week, you know, that's not something that really is something that a major presidential campaign would normally have, you know, that would normally have happened a while back.
Mara, what do you make of how these fit together, if they do?
I don't know if they fit together yet. As Rosie just said, we've had this pivot happening in fits and starts. He hires Paul Manafort, gives some speeches off a teleprompter, and then the next day he's picking fights with members of his own party. And I don't know how it fits together. We do know that the advertising campaign that he has started is pretty minimal, that it seems like he's still relying on free media, otherwise known as news coverage, of which he gets a tremendous helping to carry his campaign. We know that he's relying on the RNC for a ground game. He hasn't built much of a field operation. And don't forget that at the same time he put Kellyanne Conway in the top position, which I think was a very smart move, he also hired Steve Bannon from Breitbart as the CEO. Now, when you try to figure out, wow, what does that mean? Breitbart has been the kind of biggest media megaphone for Trumpism, the kind of mixture of anti-globalization, xenophobia, white identity politics, whatever you want to call it. So maybe he's looking beyond the campaign. Maybe he wants to start a media company or a cable channel where he would continue to be the voice for this movement. It's a global movement. There are iterations of it in Europe. And he would be the American voice and probably the most prominent voice worldwide. So I don't know yet what I make of this. What I do think, though, and you heard a little bit of this message in that clip of the ad you just played, is to me the most significant thing that Donald Trump has said in the last week or two is that if he doesn't win, it will be because and only because the election was rigged. He is telling his supporters in advance that if he doesn't win, even if he loses by a landslide, the election will be stolen from him. And to me, when I look at all of the kind of outrageous, break the mold kinds of things he has said and done, none of them approach the importance and the significance of that, of saying you should not trust the democratic process. You should view anyone who is elected as president other than me as illegitimate. And that, to me, is extremely significant.
And even that was a contradiction this week with the other thing that he was trying to do, which was reach out to racial minorities. So he also talked about the plight of Black Americans this week. He said his approach to racial equality could be better than the Democrats, considering how unequal Blacks in America still have it today. But he really only offered law and order in that speech earlier in the week, and only crime as a Black problem that he focused on. But at the same time, at another rally last week, to your point, Mara, he suggested that Black areas, and he didn't say Black areas by name, but I think everybody could figure out what he was talking about, will be trying to steal the election through voter fraud. Here's 9 seconds.
The only way they can beat it, in my opinion, and I mean this 100%, if in certain sections of the state they cheat.
The state of Pennsylvania. Mara, will you decode that for us?
Well, first of all, he's not really reaching out to African-American voters. But he is doing something, at least in some of the statements, not the clip you just played, the earlier ones, when he talks about outreach to African-Americans and he tries to have a more inclusive message, he's doing what Republican candidates have done for many, many decades. So in that sense, he's actually being a typical Republican candidate. He's actually appealing to suburban white voters, to moderate Republicans and suburban women who don't want a divisive, racially exclusive candidate. So the message, he's talking about African-Americans, but that's not who the message is aimed at. This, the other message is that he'll only lose if inner city voters engage in massive voter fraud, of which there is no evidence of anywhere. That's something different, and that clearly is the message that we just talked about to his core supporters.
Let's take a phone call. John in Boston, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Yes. Thank you for having me on. So, I one of the commentators made a comment about how Trump's focus on immigration, the border wall, illegal immigration, all these things, doesn't jive with Latino voters. I myself am Latino. My mother immigrated here in the 1970s. A lot of our friends are Latinos who immigrated here in the 70s and 80s. And I know myself, I'm voting for Trump. My mother supports Trump. I know Guatemalans and Central Americans support Trump. Even Mexicans who support Trump. These are all people who have invested their life savings into immigrating here legally, putting businesses, becoming successful people, and seeing a lot of their neighborhoods being destroyed by illegal immigration, gangs, et cetera, et cetera. I really strongly advise people to understand that Latinos, we are not a uniform, monolithic group of people. And this idea that we all support illegal immigration is false. And I think that there's going to be a big surprise because I know people, for instance, who never have voted in their life, who immigrated here at a younger age, naturalized, who are registering to vote just so they can vote for Donald Trump. But they'll never say it because they're afraid of the backlash that they'll receive from people.
Well, his polls among Latinos is not at zero, are not at zero. They're around maybe 20% or something like that. But that's a lot less than Romney got, which is a lot less yet than John McCain got, which is a lot yet less yet than George Bush got. So the party and you know, so extremely exemplified by Trump, is going in a particular direction. And if we assume the polls are roughly right, John, and there's so much other reporting about a lot of Latino legal immigrants going for naturalization right now so that they'll be able to vote against Trump in November, if we assume that it roughly turns out that way, what do you make of the split? Because the more conventional wisdom is that the way he talks about Mexicans in general, the way he talks about immigrants in general, like in that ad, the way he talks about wanting to deport people who have been here for a long time and are otherwise following the law and working hard, the implications that that has for family deunification, splitting up families that are together. So many Latinos say to me, look, if you don't respect my basic humanity, which this is considered to represent, if you don't consider my basic humanity, then I don't really care what your tax policy is, or I don't really care what your health care plan is, or down the line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. It doesn't jive with the Latinos that I speak with, and I'm fluent in Spanish. I've lived in South America. I know a lot of people in various Latino communities in the Northeast, and the thing that I hear all the time about is, why do people get to break the law, skip the line, and then basically I get to hold the bill? And basic humanity is fine, but if you go to my mom's country or Mexico or any other country illegally, you'll find yourself rotting in a prison cell, and your basic human rights will not be respected because people would prefer that you follow the law. So I understand. I mean, nobody's for taking these families apart. That's understandable. But I mean, you know, if an American immigrates illegally to a country and crosses a border, I mean, there's a great example of this Marine who went across the border from I think it was Arizona or Los Angeles or California to Mexico, and he spent time in jail. He might even still be in jail, and nobody, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. there was nothing they could do for him.
Right.
So I think the big issue is this idea of fairness. And so human rights are everyone's rights, but there also is this idea of what about the rights of law-abiding people? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big issue. So there might be a hidden vote there. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
What doesn't seem to jive with me is the amount of people I've spoken to over the past few years. Even in – I used to live in Jackson Heights, and a lot of the Latino business owners there, I mean, I myself, right down the street from my house, a Honduran illegal immigrant gang member mm-hmm. killed a Caribbean guy who was born here, and his parents were Dominican, just for bumping into him. I mean,
although that doesn't mean illegal immigrants or people here illegally are more prone to commit violent crime. I'm not sure the statistics back that up. But, John, thank you very much for your call. And maybe there's some other – maybe in response to John, there's a legal immigrant listening who would like to call up and say, why – you are sympathetic to the plight of people who are not here legally. The argument that John makes, as somebody whose mom was a legal immigrant from Central America, that okay, there are people like me, people waiting in line legally in Guatemala, in wherever, to get into the country, rather than sneaking in and jumping the line and thinking the government is then just going to let you stay. That legal immigrants should be aligned with opposing. That's John's argument. So if you are a legal immigrant, especially from a Latin American country, and you're sympathetic to the plight of illegal immigrants or people here illegally, why is that a voting issue for you? Why is that an important issue for you on that side? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692, as we talk to NPR's Mara Liasson and Rosie Gray from BuzzFeed. And here's a caller I think wants to ask Mara a question based on something she said before. Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. You know, nothing that Donald Trump says or does surprises me. You know, I grew up looking at his antics. I'm more interested in why his voters, his supporters, would be open to various conspiracy theories about how, when and if he loses, it'll be because it's rigged, because there's something dishonest happening. Where are these people that they would see any victory other than his as fundamentally illegitimate? How do they see the world that would explain that? And I'll just hang up and take your answer.
Jim, thank you. Mara, do you get the question?
Well, yes, I got the question, and it's a really interesting question. You know, why do people believe things that are not necessarily backed up by facts? It's really, I don't know if I can explain it, but it certainly has been around for as long as humans have been around. And just like Hillary Clinton supporters believe in a vast right-wing conspiracy, Donald Trump supporters believe that the mainstream media is inherently biased and wants to fix the election against him. And that's what they believe. There also are media outlets that say that, you know, over and over again. So they're hearing it. They're listening to sources that tell them that. It's hard for me to explain. I do want to make one point about the previous caller, John, who I thought was a very articulate and interesting, you know, supporter of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. Hispanic. There is this idea, and certainly the Trump campaign has pushed it, of the hidden Trump vote, that there's some kind of a stigma about telling a pollster that you're for Trump so that the Trump support is actually undercounted in the polls. That's a really interesting idea. It wasn't true in the primaries. The polling was pretty accurate. Of course, that was just among the Republican primary electorate. So I guess the theory is that among a larger electorate of voters, there is more of a stigma to saying you're for Trump, saying that publicly or telling a pollster that. And that's something that we would really be watching for. There's this effect that I've been described as the sure honey vote, where a husband might be voting for Trump. The wife doesn't like him, and she goes, "Oh, sure, honey, I'll vote for Trump." And vice versa, where the wife is voting for Hillary and the husband doesn't like her, and he goes, "Oh, sure, honey, I'll vote for Hillary." So we don't know. But those distortions are going to be revealed on election
day. Mean then they both go
if there
into,
are any.
They both go to the polling place and do whatever
cancel
they want to do
out.
Anyway. Right.
Yeah.
So here's a caller who might want to respond to the previous caller, John in the Bronx. John, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, my response to that gentleman is, I mean, I am Latino and I immigrated here from the Dominican Republic over 30 years ago. And I have seen, of course, the political spectrum ever since I've been here. And Donald Trump has woken up disenfranchised a segment of the population that really wants to blame everything on Latinos. Now, this gentleman also claims that a lot of people, especially Latinos, want to vote for Trump. My problem with that is that if you are a Latino and you have been listening to what Trump has been saying ever since the primary began, whether if you are a Latino Republican or a Latino Democrat, I just don't see why you would want to vote for someone that genuinely just does not like immigrants, especially Latino immigrants and Latinos of color.
John, the particular issue that the previous caller was raising, that people who come here legally with all that entails, or come here in any way and then legally get residency status, that they should be on the other side from those who come here or stay here illegally, because it's kind of a ripping off of them in a certain way, or people they may have in their countries of origin who are waiting to come here legally. Why does somebody like you, who I'm presuming you're here as a legal immigrant, why would you be sympathetic to people who are here illegally rather than the way John, the other caller, puts
well,
it?
Well, because legally or illegally, we all come here, the vast majority of us, whether you're Mexican, you know, Dominican, Cuban, whatever, we come here for the one main thing, and that's the American dream. I am not saying that illegal immigration should be tolerated, but also I am saying that if you are going to dehumanize a whole bunch of people based on immigration, you are not just doing that just based on immigration. You are doing it based on the ethnicity of that person. Mm-hmm. When Donald Trump spoke that day about Mexicans being rapists and murderers, he wasn't just speaking about Mexicans. He was talking about the whole Latino community as a whole.
That's how you as a Dominican heard it, even though he said Mexican by name.
That is exactly what I'm saying. Yes. It's not just Mexicans that he's referring to. He's referring to all of us. Mm-hmm. And, of course, legal or illegal, I don't believe that every illegal immigrant, or legal for that matter, is a rapist or a murderer. I've been here a long time, and I've been here working very hard and raising my children, all American citizens just like myself. And there is no way that if I was a Republican and the most conservative or Latinos Republicans, I will not even think about voting for Donald Trump.
John, thank you very much for your call. Call us again. And our other caller also, please call us again. All right. So, Rosie Gray, if it wasn't another eye-poppingly bad week for Trump's presidential campaign, it might have been a bad one for Hillary Clinton's, but not that many people may have noticed. But on Thursday, Bill Clinton announced that if Hillary is elected president, he, Bill, will resign from the Clinton Foundation board, and that the foundation would no longer accept either foreign or corporate money, if I understand it correctly. That was Thursday. And that's a defensive move based on recent revelations of emails showing State Department staffers under Secretary Clinton trying to do official favors for two donors to the foundation. Then on Friday, a judge ordered Hillary Clinton to offer written testimony under oath about why she set up her private server as her only email address as Secretary of State. So let's talk about that one first. If you're on this story, Rosie, now that the FBI has cleared her of any criminal wrongdoing for that, why is this back in court?
Well, this isn't a story that I necessarily cover very closely because I cover Republicans, but I could say about this that, you know, this is another example of the sort of constant drip that's happened with this story for the entire election, which in a way Hillary Clinton has sort of gotten lucky in that her opponent is Donald Trump, who eats up news cycles like it's his job, and takes attention away from this issue. So on the server issue, I think that's going to be one of those sort of slow burning things, I think, probably for a long time. I mean, we're never going to really have a good answer to why she did that. And, and that's something that definitely on the Republican side is something that I think will be something that, you know, the opposition to her will always talk about.
So, Mara, since you're also covering Democrats, and forgive me for throwing, Rosie, that first question at you, since you are covering the Republicans, Mara, what is the nature of this civil suit and why is this back in court?
Well, the civil suit is from Judicial Watch, which is a conservative advocacy organization. They wanted to depose Hillary Clinton, but instead the judge said you can submit questions to her and she'll have to answer them in writing. It keeps the email story alive. And, of course, at the same time, Congress has received from the FBI notes from their interview with Hillary Clinton. They don't have a tape, as I understand it. They do have notes. So they'll be able to use those to investigate the server issue further. So as Rosie said, the server issue is not going away. It is a drip. You've also got the foundation, which is something that Donald Trump has been trying to call attention to, but he keeps on distracting from it with other feuds. Bill Clinton announced that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, not only will the Clinton Global Initiative, the big meeting he has every year, that will stop. He and Chelsea will no longer have formal roles in the foundation, and that corporations and foreign governments will not be able to donate money. That is an acknowledgement that the foundation is a problem for her, that there are conflicts of interest, inherent conflicts of interest. Donald Trump, of course, says that the foundation should be shut down because even if corporations in foreign countries aren't giving any more money, what about the donors that did give money? Doesn't that present a conflict if she does become president? So it is a big problem for her. But as Rosie said, she's lucky that she has someone who wants to suck all the oxygen out of the news cycle every single day. And I think the thing that we're learning, which is so interesting, is that Donald Trump's you know, a basic belief is that all publicity is good publicity, and dominance of social media, dominance of news coverage, free media, is the way, is equal somehow to getting votes. And I think that was true in the primaries. It's not turning out to be true, at least according to the polls, in the general election.
You say that because Bill Clinton finds it necessary to leave the Clinton Foundation board and then restrict the kinds of money that they will take in the future, it suggests that there really has been a conflict of interest here.
Well, it suggests that the foundation is a problem. And many Democrats were asking, whoa, why didn't they do this long ago, as soon as she started running for president?
Or even
when she was Secretary of State, for that matter.
Yes, or even when she was Secretary of State, yeah.
And weren't there promises that she made when she became Secretary of State to distance herself or something having to do with some kinds of money and the Clinton Foundation, forgive me for not knowing the detail, that that she said she was going to do when she became Secretary of State and then didn't?
Well, one of the things she said she was going to do was she was going to have all the donations from foreign sources vetted by the State Department, and I think that was not done in all cases.
How can Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton, in effect, resign from the Clinton Foundation board? Can there be no Clintons running the Clinton Foundation?
Sure.
It's
yeah,
something.
Absolutely.
They launched it, but then left it to others.
Yes, they can do that.
Can you, as a reporter, Mara, or how much can you, as a reporter, separate the foundation's ambitious charitable mission? And let's give it that they have a legitimate ambitious charitable mission of Bill Clinton as, you know, his primary post-presidency work in the world, from any political or financial gain that Hillary Clinton gets from it?
Well, first of all, I'm not quite sure what – so their accusation that there's a connection somehow that the foundation donors have given her money personally, I'm a little unclear on your question.
Well, people say, she gets rich from the Clinton Foundation. So as a matter of fact, that's not true and cannot be true because the money does not go to her.
The Clinton campaign would tell you that she has raised money. She has taken, given paid speeches and given those proceeds to the Clinton Foundation. This is how they have funded the Clinton Foundation. Now, the bulk of their income is from paid speeches, particularly Bill Clinton's paid speeches. We saw that in their tax returns. I think they made $10 million in 2015. You know, when he gives a speech, that's not necessarily they're not giving the donation to the Clinton Foundation, but they're giving it to him. It's very complicated. There is tremendous potential for conflict. There's tremendous potential for the appearance of conflict. And as Rosie just said, when she became Secretary of State, all those things were there. And she could have shut down the foundation or put it in a de facto blind trust where she separated her family members from it. But they decided not to. It's now a big problem. The only reason it's not an even bigger problem is because Donald Trump has bigger problems. Mm.
And the timeline here on the email deposition or the email civil suit by Judicial Watch is that they have until October 14th to submit questions in writing to Clinton. Then Clinton has another 30 days to answer them, if the reports I read are accurate, which means she could wait until after the election. But, Mara, how do you see this playing out? Will there be a Judicial Watch public event around October 14th publicizing their list of questions, which they'll say is unanswered, and then Hillary will have to dodge until after the election?
That's possible. Yeah, why not? That's very possible. It's also possible that WikiLeaks has something that they'll be announcing on October 16th. So, you know, we're all waiting for October surprises of many forms.
And lastly, Rosie, how about the tax returns of Donald Trump? There keep being suggestions of things that are in there about how little tax he paid or how little money he gave to charity or how little money he really makes compared to what he claims he makes. And it seems to me like the pressure on him is ramping up. Another story in the last few days is that Pence says he'll release his tax return. So you have the vice presidential candidate doing it, which indirectly puts an additional amount of pressure on the top of the ticket. But where does that stand?
Well, I mean, you know, it's fun to speculate about what's in his tax returns, but the truth is we just don't know because he won't release them. But, you know, And I would like to know that that is a very unusual stance for a major party nominee to take. And you're talking about pressure ramping up on him. I don't think there's any evidence. Like, if you look at Donald Trump's behavior over the course of the campaign, I don't think you can really see a causal relationship between pressure on Donald Trump and Donald Trump doing something. So I would not hold out hope that we're going to see those tax returns.
Rosie Gray, political reporter from BuzzFeed, Mara Liasson, NPR national political correspondent. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.